Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 413, titled Looking Back and Looking Ahead. This is being recorded on June 9th of the year 2003. We're going to be, as the title of the broadcast indicates, looking back at some things that have happened in relation to Iraq, in relation to September 11th, and even, and this should come as no surprise, in relation to the Second World War. And we're going to be looking ahead, and we're going to take a look at some things that are shaping up, both economic and political. And once again, I want to stress very, very strongly the connection between the political developments vis-a-vis Iraq, the war on terror, America's involvement in that landmass called the Earth Island. This is what the Nazi geopoliticians termed the stretch of land running from Spain all the way across Europe and Asia to the Pacific Ocean, the middle of it inhabited by a Muslim population and controlling most of the world's landmass, and consequently the Muslim population and that landmass and the control of both was seen as a key to Nazi geopolitical aspirations. Before we get into the main body of the broadcast, WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. Recent programs streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Older programs available for download only on a longer URL, linked to both the Spitfire website and to the wfmu.org/Dave Emery website. The Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com has a detailed annotated article-length description of all of the For the Record programs from 233 on up. And within a week to 2 weeks of the airing of this broadcast, it will have a detailed article-length description of For the Record 413 as well. The Spitfire website is equipped with Real Audio, and Spitfire stocks tapes and CDs of all of the programs that I've recorded over the years. You can reach them by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, regular mail, or email, I should say, mail@spitfirelist.com. I do not get money from that arrangement. Now, the first element of the program will be a review of the item with which we closed our last broadcast, namely some discussion of a Swiss banker named Elio Baradori, his shepherding of an account codenamed Satan for an Iraqi national and relative of Saddam Hussein named Saad al-Mahdi. And that account was run through the Banco del Gotardo. Banco del Gotardo is the Swiss subsidiary of the old Banco Ambrosiano. It also is inextricably linked, on the one hand, with the milieu of the old P2 Lodge and the Italian Prime Minister of current Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, his political allies in the Alleanza Nazionale, the renamed and slightly reworked Italian fascist party that descended from Mussolini. And also, the Banco del Gotardo is inextricably linked with the Bank Al-Taqwa, or Nada Management, the Bank of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood, as we've seen in many programs, is the Islamo-fascist organization that is the root organization or parent organization of all of the world's militant Islamic groups. And it was allied with Nazi Germany and fascist Italy in World War II and had an economic program quite similar to that of fascist Italy. Al-Qaeda and the Al-Taqwa milieu are offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. We're going to be taking a look in particular at a remarkable coincidence, if indeed it is that. Certainly an element of overlap between the Satan account and the Banco del Gotardo, formerly managed by Saad al-Mahdi, and also Bank Al-Taqwa, namely Gianluca Boscaro. He was a Swiss attorney who was hired by the al-Mahdi family to straighten out some of the missing millions. It was also at the offices of Gianluca Boscaro that Bank Al-Taqwa was originally incorporated back in 1988. And we're going to take a look back at some of this, and then later we're going to look forward at a number of different items as well. This first article comes from the Sunday Times of London of April 13th of 2003. The article is titled, Banker Who Hid Saddam's Millions. And there are a number of different authors. I'll read those at the end. Now, again, this is about an account codenamed Satan that was in the Banco del Gotardo and its branch in Nassau in the Bahamas. Skipping down in this article and reviewing an element that we looked at in last week's program, to cover the tracks, much of the money passed to account number 70513 at the Banco del Gotardo in Nassau in the Bahamas, the Satan account. One banking slip indicated a payment as recently as December of 1998. There were 47 other bank accounts linked to the offshore network. Bordadori was usually president and signatory for the companies, and the day-to-day transactions were handled by an accountant for him. But the man in control of the Iraqi regime was al-Mahdi. Something of a playboy, al-Mahdi jetted around Europe while in Iraq. Saddam used some of the millions to build extravagant palaces. Saddam constructed at least 50 palaces with expensive, if tasteless, fittings. His son Uday bought scores of luxury cars, including a red Rolls-Royce Corniche. And millions more went to cronies. Saddam, however, appears to have suspected al-Mahdi of stealing from the accounts. He was summoned to Baghdad and beheaded for theft and behavior disrespectful to Islam. And later, al-Mahdi's relatives hired Gianluca Boscaro to attempt to straighten out this network and clear al-Mahdi's name and locate some of the millions. Skipping down in this article, years after the death of al-Mahdi, his family decided to pursue some of the millions that had washed through this network of offshore companies. They hired Gianluca Boscaro, B-O-S-C-A-R-O, a Swiss lawyer, to bring a case which named, among others, Bordadori's accountant and other trustees. In defense against Boscaro's claim, a welter of documents was produced which aimed to show that most of the assets had been transferred out of the offshore network. But they also provided clear evidence that the ultimate beneficiary of the companies was the Iraqi regime and not Saad al-Mahdi. Through the legal action, Boscaro secured evidence of how, at least in part, Saddam had siphoned off a fortune and hidden it around the world. Increasingly paranoid about his own safety, Boscaro told one friend that should anything untoward happen to him, the documents should be brought to public attention. In the midst of a legal action in August of last year, Boscaro, an adventurous man in his 40s, died while taking time off from the case to relax in the foothills of the Piedmont Mountains. At around 7:30 p.m. on a clear sunny evening, he was floating high in the sky beneath a paraglider. Suddenly, the canopy seemed to stall, and Boscaro plunged to his death. It's a dangerous sport, and such accidents are not uncommon, but officials who examined the canopy noticed that cords were damaged. Police concluded it was an accident, although friends of Boscaro dispute their findings. Accident or murder? It may never be known, but for Saddam, the end was nearing anyway. Within months, coalition troops were on their way to Kuwait. However, the many millions Saddam siphoned off for his own purposes may never be fully traced, let alone recovered. And for the Insight section of the Sunday Times of London, Stephen Gray, Nick Fielding, John Ungood Thomas, Edine Hamzik, Paolo Fusi, and Eben Black contributed. And that again from the London Times of April 13th of 2003. What we're going to take a look at now is the genesis of the bank Altaqua, and we're going to take a look at a number of familiar names, including Gianluca Boscaro. Now, remember a couple of things. First of all, Lugano, Switzerland is a major funny money center, so to speak. It's not only the epicenter of the Banco del Gotardo, it's the epicenter of Bank Altaqua. It also is the epicenter of the Thyssen Bornemisza Empire. That's a branch of the Thyssen German Heavy Industrial Group. It was a linchpin of the Third Reich and a linchpin of the post-World War II underground Nazi money international, so to speak. And it was from the Thyssen Bornemisza Empire that much of the financial largesse of the Bush family originally sprung. As recently as 1996, a Dutch journalist who was looking into this died under strange circumstances. So Lugano, Switzerland is a very, very interesting place, apparently as filled with financial and political intrigue as it is prepossessingly beautiful. And it is, according to report, a very, very beautiful place indeed. We're going to look now at a paper written by the brilliant Kevin Coogan that we looked at in, for the record, 377, 378, and 381. Many of Kevin's articles about Bank al-Taqwa, Ahmed Huber, and other related matters are on a website that is www.oraclesyndicate.pub. Oracle Syndicate is O-R-A-C-L-E-S-Y-N-D-I-C-A-T-E. That's one word. And simply basically for a Google search on Kevin Coogan or Oracle Syndicate, and it will get you to the articles. I recommend do a Google search on Kevin Coogan. This will get you not only to this paper, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and al-Taqwa, but also the article, The Mysterious Ahmed Huber, Friend to Hitler, Allah, and Bin Laden, and a sidebar article to that called Ahmed Huber, the Avalon Gemeinschaft, and the Swiss New Right. All of those on the Oracle Syndicate website. Also, a very important paper by Kevin Coogan about the fascist element within the black metal music scene, something that's of more than passing interest in light of the utilization of elements of the black metal music scene to disseminate fascist propaganda and indoctrination. Now, again, on the Oracle Syndicate website, Kevin Coogan's article, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and al-Taqwa, can be accessed. This is a paper that we used in, for the record, 377, 378, and 381. This information, in turn, is derived from the book by Hermanja and Johannes von Donani entitled Schmutzige Geschäfte und Heiliger Krieg. That translates Dirty Business and Holy War. It was published in German by Pendo Verlag in 2002. That is out of Zurich. And of the genesis of Bank al-Taqwa, and we're going to see some familiar names here, we want to note that this the incorporation of al-Taqwa took place in the offices of the late Gianluca Boscaro, retained by the Mahdi family to help to straighten out the finances there, and it was Gianluca Boscaro who died in the hang gliding accident that we just read about. From Kevin Coogan's report on Islamists, the Far Right, and al-Taqwa of the incorporation of al-Taqwa, we read, returning to the Donani book, on July 21, 1988, at the bureau of a Lugano-based notary named Gianluca Boscaro, gathered Ahmed Huber, the Swiss professor Mohammed Mansour, and his wife Zainab, Mansour Fatou, as well as the Tunisian Youssef Nada and Ali Galeb Himat, who both live in the Italian enclave of Campione d'Italia in Switzerland. Himat had come from Damascus in 1958 and first settled down in Germany and then in Austria. The Alexandrian-born Egyptian Nada, 2 years later, came first to Austria and then to Germany. Nada's oldest daughter married the son of the director of the Islamist center in Aachen, Al-Attar Issam, who was considered by the German Office for the Protection of the Constitution, or for Verfassungsschutz, to be one of the most dangerous Islamists in Germany. Nada later settled down in Ticino, or Tessin. Both Nada and Himat are members of the Muslim Brotherhood, and in the 1990s both took Italian citizenship. The goal of the meeting with the notary was the founding of the al-Taqwa Management Organization SA that said it would be concerned with importing and exporting various goods around the world. 333 of the 1,000 shares at 100 Swiss francs a share went to Mohamed Mansour and his wife. 332 went to Huber. Nada and Himat took the rest. Mansour was named the president, but rarely was it mentioned the clause in which the contract papers that each decision must be co-signed by the minority holders Nada and Himat. Meanwhile, Nada became associated with such prestigious groups as the P.U. Manzu think tank, which is located on the Adriatic coast, and includes the likes of Gianni Agnelli and Henry Kissinger. We should note, too, by the way, that it was through some of the P2 Stibom nexus that much of the arming of Saddam Hussein under the Iraqgate scandal also took place. So in the past, we have not only looked at the link between the P2 nexus and Silvio Berlusconi and the current government of Italy and the Bank al-Taqwa, but in the past, we've looked at that same nexus and its connections to the arming of Iraq. There's an interesting consideration in conjunction with the engagement, I guess one could say, of the United States in an economically expensive, a very costly war against the Muslim peoples of what the Third Reich referred to as the Earth Island, and matters economic in the United States. And I'm going to reread. I've read this a number of times, several times in the past, and I'm going to reread a section of the conclusion of Kevin Coogan's paper, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Bank al-Taqwa. The conclusion, the Nazi-Islamist connection? The overwhelming thrust of this report has been to give the reader a great deal of empirical information that he or she may not have easy access to in order that they may evaluate the claims for themselves. I have avoided drawing any conclusions because I do not feel qualified to draw conclusions about the Islamist financial machinations this report discusses. However, I find it impossible not to put out a call for further research involving the overlap between Nazi and Islamist networks that seem to have been in continual contact from the 1930s until today. In the case of Janoo, Huber, and Saeed Ramadan, this is becoming more and more impossible to avoid. My own belief, by the way, this is Kevin Coogan writing here, my own belief is that it is less the apparently fantastic and James Bond-like quality of this analysis that is most difficult to understand. The real difficulty is the utter ignorance of most Americans, most Westerners, Americans in particular, about the very existence of such people as François Janoo. Thus, when Ernest Bacchus, one of Europe's leading experts in money laundering, told the Luxembourg-based economic journal Plus Minus last year that he believed the financial source of funds for the 9/11 terrorists would ultimately be traced back to Swiss bank accounts established by Janoo, few Americans had any idea what Bacchus could possibly be talking about. For this same reason, there has been virtually no independent investigation into SICO's Baudin Dunant's relationship to Janoo, or for that matter, the role that the Syrian-born Mohammed Mardam Bey, believed to be related to a former Syrian foreign minister, has played both as a member of Magnin Dunant and Associates, as well as Bey's possible links with Janoo. And what does it mean when we are told that Youssef Nada, for example, is believed by Egyptian authorities to have worked for German intelligence in World War II? By the way, of course, François Janoo, a person we've looked at in the past, was the banker for the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, heir to the literary works of Joseph Goebbels, Martin Bormann, and Adolf Hitler, a key financier of the Odessa networks, and a key defender of various Nazi war criminals, including Adolf Eichmann, when they came to trial. François Janoo also maintained very, very strong links with various Muslim and Middle Eastern nationalist groups, as well as with the Middle Eastern fascists and Islamists of various stripes. When he stood trial for terrorism in France in 1983, his close friend, Baudin Dunant, represented him from a legal standpoint, and Dunant is the co-chairman of the board of SECO, the Saudi investment company, the parent company for the very powerful bin Laden family's economic undertakings. Turning once again to the report on Islamists, the far right, and al-Taqwa, Kevin Coogan writes here, "It is not at all impossible that networks first developed in the 1930s and that saw their economic power fantastically multiplied in the wake of the enormous hike in oil prices in 1973 are now engaged in trying to enact a major financial shift away from the dollar and Anglo-American financial networks and to shift the vast wealth of the Muslim oil states into a new Euro-based financial network that would vastly increase the power of those banks and financial interests in Europe associated with elements of far-right elites that survived World War II relatively intact. If this were at all the case, it would not be a new development. The very same attempt to develop an independent Saudi-German hookup to subvert the U.S. and British domination of the Saudi oil markets was actually attempted in the mid-1950s. At that time, the Saudi royal family, using the advice of the famous German banker Hjalmar Schacht, attempted to employ Aristotle Onassis to transport Saudi oil on new oil tankers that would be constructed in the shipyards of Germany. This attempt to break the Western oil control over Saudi Arabia was finally blocked by the United States, a story well documented in Jim Hogan's book Spooks, published by William Morrow in New York and copyright 1978. The documentation regarding this complex question is there for anyone who wants to examine it. Of course, I am not attempting to suggest a simple monocausal explanation for the current crisis. What I am suggesting is that sooner or later, these connections between the far right and groups like the Muslim Brotherhood that began in the 1930s and continue today will have to become the subject of serious and sober research in order to help us shed new light on the extraordinary circumstances we are living under today." And that again, authored by Kevin Coogan in September of 2002. The report of the paper titled Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and al-Taqwa, along with a number of other very important papers by Kevin Coogan, the author of A Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey, and the Postwar Fascist International. Those are on the Oracle Syndicate website. That's one word, Oracle, one word composed of two, Oracle Syndicate. Just do a Google search on Kevin Coogan's name and you will get to that page. What we're going to do in the balance of the broadcast is to take a look at the relationship between terrorism and matters economic. And these issues in turn are inextricably linked with not only the recent Iraq war, and again, I would caution against too quick an analysis of what will come out of that. I had grave reservations about the prospect of going in there before the war, and I still have the same grave reservations. It will, however, be probably many years, probably 8 to 10 years, before the true effects of that conflict, both on the Middle East and on the United States, are truly evident. But we will see. What we're going to be looking at is the relationship between economics and this country's economic situation and the war on terror. And in particular, we're going to be taking a look at the debt situation in the United States. Last week, we took a look at the fact that now even as staid sources as the Financial Times are stating in their editorials that the Financial Times of London, that is, are stating in their editorials that the radicals in the Bush administration are literally planning a fiscal train wreck. They're attempting to deliberately precipitate a fiscal crisis. And I noted last week that the Bush tax cuts, according to a report commissioned by the United States Treasury, but suppressed by the Bush administration, and as far as I know, virtually suppressed by the American media, state that the accrued budget deficits of the Bush tax cuts will total $44,200,000,000,000, and it will roughly increase the publicly held national debt by tenfold. But then what's $44 trillion between friends? What we're going to take a look throughout much of the broadcast is the relationship between the war on terror, this protracted conflict that is taking shape between the United States and the population of the Earth Island, the Muslim population in particular. And we're going to be taking a look at the American economy. Bear in mind that Grover Norquist, the radical within the Bush administration, is not only the point man for the tax cutting, which has placed this country into on a collision course with fiscal reality, but he also was the point man for the Islamists who were present on the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, an historical repository for Nazi and fascist elements dating to World War II. And specifically, Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute had a number of people who directly overlapped not only the Bush administration, but also the Bank Al-Taqwa that we just looked at. Bear in mind some of Kevin Coogan's ruminations about the possibility of precipitating a shift of the vast oil wealth of the Muslim countries away from the dollar and into financial institutions associated with European far-right elites that survived World War II largely intact. And in that context, consider the following. This is from the Financial Times of May 31st and June 1st of 2003. An article by Mary Chung in New York, it's headlined, Wall Street Wary of Rush to the Exits. For years, the U.S. has been viewed as the most attractive region for global investors, but concerns about the economy, the weak dollar, and corporate governance may be changing that. A rush to the exit doors by overseas investors would be a huge blow to Wall Street and the fragile U.S. economy. That's because overseas investors own about 45% of all U.S. government bonds, 35% of corporate bonds, and 12% of equity holdings. The stock market has already seen a withdrawal of overseas funds because of the three-year bear market. But those losses in stocks have been offset by a heavy rotation of money into U.S. government and corporate bonds. But the current danger is that overseas investors will reduce their U.S. asset holdings or pull out completely amid increasing doubts about the commitment of the administration of George W. Bush to a strong dollar. Those doubts were compounded by the apparent unconcern of John Snow, Treasury Secretary, to the greenback's sharp slide. While the White House may be playing down the drop, Wall Street is taking notice. The worry is that overseas investors will find little incentive to keep funds in the U.S., especially if the dollar continues to falter. Clark Winter, Global Investment Strategy at Citigroup Private Bank, said overseas investors are finding alternatives to the U.S., which has long been viewed as the region to park money, unquote. I would note a front page article in For the Record, in the description for For the Record program 408 about the resurgence of the Muslim Brotherhood and how they may very well take advantage of new democracies in the Middle East to gain power themselves. In any event, sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com, SPITFIRELIST.com. You can reach Spitfire by email at mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, and by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. That concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program 413, Looking Back and Looking Ahead, being recorded on June 9th of 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.